The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
In the studio with me today is Jim Gray. Welcome, Jim. Jim is an Orlando City Council member. He's also the managing director at CBRE. It's great to have you along.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
You know, it's really fun to meet people that I have not met before, and you would fit that bill, although I feel like I know you because of people that you know.
Interesting. Well, some of that's by design. I try as a political figure to stay out of the news and do my work in the background. But I've been a resident of Orlando for 33 years.
Now, you said something right there that I just got to go back, because I've never been convinced that anyone could say that and really mean it. You're a political figure that tries to stay out of the news.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? Yes, yes. A novel concept.
That's an incredibly novel thought. I mean, when I think of federal... all of the federal offices, I think they are looking for every way they can get into the news or in front of the camera.
Yeah, I think as it certainly works its way up from the state level in Tallahassee here up to the federal level that, getting some press and getting yourself out in front is an advantage. But I found it here locally to do my work behind the scenes with either city staff and or my neighbors, and we get things done. We're very fortunate.
Well, I know you work in real estate for your livelihood and your main gig, your main job. But let's take a moment and get to know you. Where did you grow up?
I'm a little farm boy from upstate New York. Grew up in a small town of about 3,000, very much agricultural based. And so I was a country boy, and we would do school and sports during the year, but summertime, that was time to bale hay and get ready for the upcoming winter. So very much an agricultural background.
Now, you were up early in the morning then, right?
Oh, up early in the morning doing all that good stuff and that farmers do. And but look, when I reflect back on it, I wouldn't have traded for anything. It was great education for me. Grew up in a small town where you knew everyone and they knew you. So that tended to keep me out of trouble as a young lad.
Yeah.
A lot of people would call the house if I got in trouble. So anyway, it was great. It was a great environment for me to grow up.
You know, I wish more people. I grew up in a smaller farm, nothing like as big as what you did, but it was in Indiana. And I wish that everyone could have that kind of Americana background. Kids of today, They don't have a clue as to what you're talking about.
There's a lot of truth to that. And you get a lot of responsibility that at the time as a kid, I didn't know, but you're driving tractors and farm equipment and, you know, you're 14, 15, 16 years old. And today, I think our insurance companies would have some real issues with that.
They may have something to say.
But at the time, you know, you used the manpower and the resources you had, and so it was a great way for me to grow up.
Did you have brothers and sisters, too?
I do. I've got an older brother and then a younger brother and a younger sister. So three siblings, four kids.
Four of you.
Yeah.
Were they believers?
Yes and no. They encouraged us as kids to go to church, and really Sunday school, they would go to church.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the congregational church. But it was good for me to, certainly with social time as kids, you know, a lot of social activity. But the Sunday school and then the evening youth group was really my background or introduction to Christ.
How old were you when all of this became real?
Great question. It really started to crystallize for me when I went into the military. And I did that right out of high school really requirement and necessity. There was no money for me to go to college. And so my ticket to get an education was to go through the military and get the GI Bill. And so we're mid-70s now, right after the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of the Vietnam vets were coming back. But as a single guy at the time from New York, and I was in the Air Force, so I was down in Texas, and I had a lot of time on my hands, And I got involved in some of the Bible studies that were happening on base. And that's really where it crystallized for me and kind of came into focus. And that's where I spent more time in the Bible and starting to educate myself and become a little more involved in different activities.
Do you remember the day specifically when you prayed?
I'm embarrassed to tell you I don't, Mike.
That's a lot of people don't. That's okay. Nothing to be embarrassed about at all.
Good, I feel better now.
Yeah, good. Yeah, be released,
you,
man. Yeah, if I, yeah, you're free.
Thank you.
Like I have the ability to say that, but honestly, I think a lot of us. I wish I knew the date. I don't remember the date. I remember that a specific night when I did pray, but many people don't because it's they grew up. And they found themselves believing and having been a believer for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it worked for me because, again, I had a lot of time on my hands. And it just allowed me to not only get involved with other Christians, but to read the Bible and to educate myself more. And so that was it for me.
Was there a particular church or like an organization that were doing those Bible studies?
There really was. It was on base. And so I traveled quite a bit. I was in communications. So I was the guy that would go to the control towers and put the antennas on top and telephones and all kinds of communications. So I traveled throughout the Southwest with San Antonio as my base. And so I would get involved and hooked into local bases and their Bible studies. And obviously everybody was very inviting and it was great. But
were they still giving out third class tickets back in that day?
No, they weren't.
Man.
But yeah, I know. My loss there.
Yeah, your loss. Yep. That's right. Because I got to study a lot of the things that I never needed to know to get my first broadcasting permit back in the 70s.
Is that right? Yeah. Beautiful.
In the early 70s.
Well, I think it's worked out well for you.
It wasn't too bad time loss, but it was fun. Well, that's really great. And I want to say thank you for serving our country as you did in the U.S. Air Force.
Thank you very much for saying that. It was the best experience of my life. It really helped ground me and helped me prioritize what was important. And so it opened my eyes to a whole different part of the world. Again, remember, you're a small kid in a small town, pretty sheltered, didn't see a lot of things like crime and all the things that happen in a bigger environment. And so when I went in the military, it was an eye opener. I tell my friends the first story at that time, again, we're mid 70s. If you had created, or if you had done some small petty crime, if you volunteered to go into the military, oftentimes the judge would allow you to be dismissed and go in the military. So my first night, you know, and again, the little farm boy from a small town, I'm sleeping right next to a guy that was running a car theft ring in Harlem. Mm. And that was an eye-opener for me.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh,
you know
yeah,
what I found?
You weren't ready for that one.
While he was a little misguided, it was obvious that he just didn't have the upbringing and the family background to help him. And as we got to know each other, he became a good friend.
Wow.
And it's just an experience. You know, he was involved in the wrong crowd and the wrong environment. And when he got in the military, where he was eliminated all those other distractions, he's really a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's kind of how the Lord works sometimes.
Well, I'm thinking that your CO would have loved you. I mean, you think about the discipline that you were already under. Number two, the respect that you would have already been raised in and having that for your parents as you did. I would think that you'd been a model soldier.
Well, I did good afterwards. I will say in basic training, nobody cared. My sergeant didn't care. Everybody was treated the same way. But no, yeah. I did have a leg up from that standpoint. But look, the things I didn't have was the exposure to all other kinds of life, quality of life, et cetera. So it was a great learning environment. So we oftentimes say, especially the older generation, we wish everyone could spend some time in our military. And I really do wish, I realize it's you know, just not very practical, but I wish it could be because it's a great environment. And, you know, I've learned a lot of that. I've taken a lot of that in my older life. And that is, like it or not, you got to learn how to get along with people.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always get your way. And in the military, that is absolutely correct. You follow orders and you do what you're told. And so it's worked well for me.
Now, you said you were in communications. So did you ever have a desire to be a pilot?
Of course I did. In fact, I fell prey to the recruiter's story. You know, hey, Jim, come on, we'll put you in. You can work on the flight line and you can go to night school and then you can go to officer school and be a pilot. And when I remember when I got my orders, it said, I'm going to go from basic training to telephone communications and radar communications. I said, hey, Sarge, there's a problem here. There's an error. I'm supposed to be going to the flight line. And he started laughing.
Yeah,
he
they said, probably had a good laugh.
Yeah,
on that
one. He heard that about once a week. And he said, well, Jim, you know, those glasses you're wearing automatically disqualify you from being a pilot because you got to have perfect vision.
Mm-hmm.
So then the light bulb went off and I realized.
You've been had.
Been had. But look, you're in it. You know, you can whine, complain, but it's not going to change. So you adapt. And so I adapted and, you know, things work out for the best.
Well, that would have, if I had been in your shoes, I would have been in the same boat because my eyes were bad even then too.
Yeah.
They don't let those pilots wear contact lenses.
They do not. They do not. They're the best of the best.
Yeah. They've got to be able to do it and they've got to be able to see. And I'm just so appreciative for all of you, what you did. I mean, the utmost love and respect for those that serve our great country in the military. Thank you again for doing that.
Thank you,
that.
Mike, for saying that. That's very, very gracious.
Yeah, I mean it. So then you obviously got to go on and get some education then as a result of all that.
I did. You know, it was interesting. At the time, the oil money in Texas was flowing. And so a lot of revenues going into the state education system. So it was cheaper for me to stay right in Texas and go to school rather than go back to New York. Mm-hmm. So I went to school at the University of Houston, got a degree in finance, and decided I wanted to be a banker. So I was a banker for the first 15 years of my career.
Now you look like a banker. you got the suit on, the tie. You're doing it, man.
I play the part. It's interesting. Even today, will wear a tie every day. I feel a little awkward and out of sorts if I'm not wearing a tie and provides good fodder for all the folks at the office to give me a hard time. But I do. But I love the banking environment. Now it's a little bit more difficult with all the regulations. But at the time, it was a great way for me to start my career.
Mm-hmm. So how far up in banking did you go?
Well, I was on the real estate lending side. So I was lending money to people building houses and apartment buildings and shopping centers. And so I was doing that in Houston for about 10 years. And then my wife and I moved here to Orlando, was recruited here to Orlando as Orlando was growing. And so moved here in right around 1990. And just loved Orlando from the first time we came here. It was a great place for us to raise our children.
We moved here in 85, so just before that.
Yeah, things are changing, of course, as we grow. But at the time, it was a perfect fit for us. And 33 years later, we still love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the area where the mouse built the house. There.
That's it.
That's it. And so
when all things started.
Yeah. You know, you're in this real estate business back in that time frame. It was just the beginning of what turned out to be a colossal boom the next decade for Orlando. So real estate, man, it grew like crazy from the moment you got here.
It really has. Very lucky with that. I think a lot of it is, and we still fight it to some extent today, is this perception that Orlando is nothing but a tourist city. And through our, you know, Orlando Economic Partnership and Chamber of Commerce, et cetera, we continue to send the message that, hey, Orlando's more than tourism. We've got some great universities. We've got some great medical facilities. Those, over time, that message has gotten out. And so now I think you'll see in Orlando as we grow, there's a lot of different opportunities, all of which tend to involve real estate, whether that's residential homes, whether it's office buildings, shopping centers, et cetera. So I've been very lucky to have fallen into the right career field, I guess I would say. I can't tell you it was all brains. I got very lucky, Mike.
Well, I don't know if I believe all of that, but we'll go with it.
Okay.
How about that?
Good, good.
Now, you're a manager of a company that is a brokerage firm for commercial real estate.
Right. We are the largest in the world and also largest in the U.S. And large doesn't really get you anything special. You still have to serve your clients in an appropriate manner. So what we do is all things commercial real estate. So we will help you lease a building that you own, we'll help you find a space in a shopping center or an office building if you need space for your business. And it's all food groups, so it's office and warehouse and retail centers and on and on. So it's really, again, it tied with the growth of Orlando has really helped us grow our business.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it continuing to grow because there's a lot of really good things about Orlando, and people and companies want to move to Central Florida.
It's still one of the hottest destination points. I know that in the early 2000s, it was like it went off the charts in terms of how many people were coming here, moving from other parts. But right. With this pandemic thing, it's a resurgence of growth right now.
It really is. And I think people have more options now with the remote working. And what we're finding to our advantage is that price points here in Orlando, especially for housing, but commercial use as well, are, while they're expensive to us who have been here for a while, if you're moving in from the West Coast mm-hmm. or the Northeast, our home prices seem very, very affordable to a lot of those
folks. Maybe even cheap.
But to us who have been here, we feel the increase in prices. But for folks coming from out of this market, Orlando, Central Florida, all of Florida really is still very affordable. And now I think that helps.
From your vantage point, what are some of the really big changes that you see happening in your industry?
A lot of it is technology, like a lot of different industries. And that is with the advent of the internet, people can now get online and it helps you market your properties. So now if you're trying to sell, you can reach a wider audience. If you're trying to buy, you have the ability to get through the internet with technology mm-hmm. and see a lot more properties that you normally couldn't see if you jumped in the car and drove block by block. And so that's had a lot to do with it, the technology and just the exposure, and it's helped marketing a great deal.
Now, I know in the housing market, in the homes, this is a seller's market.
It is.
Would that be true in the commercial industry as well?
It is. Right now, it really is. The only area that is struggling a bit is office, and that is we're trying to figure out, there's a lot of disruption with COVID. Are workers going to come back to the office? Is that where they want to be? Do they want to work more remotely? Is it some blend? Mm. And it's going to take a while for that to kind of sort itself out. But all the other areas, especially with the advent of e-commerce, right now, warehouse properties are at a premium because there's so much e-commerce going, and all those companies need places to store their goods and put them on the delivery truck and get them out to our houses.
The Amazon effect.
It is. Exactly. Well said.
Well, we'll be back with Jim Gray. He is obviously a person who is active in so many different areas, a managing director at CBRE, a member of the Orlando City Council, and a good friend to a good friend. And we'll talk about that coming up in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Listen, we all know in business nowadays, one of the hardest things to get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, right? Trying to get content, good content at that, always struggling with your phone, never understanding the settings, and then when you finally post the picture or video, it looks terrible. Well, I'm about to let you in on a little secret in how to make this problem simply go away. I'm talking about Boundless Drone Services. Let me tell you, Boundless Drone Services takes away all the stress. Brian and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Or maybe you'd like to do what we did at Mark Radio and have them highlight the wonderful team that you have working for you. At Boundless Drone Services, they really can do it all. Contact them today at 407-601-2438 or go directly to their website at boundlessdroneservices.com to see how they can help you take your business to the next level in marketing.
In the studio with me today is Jim Gray. He's with CBRE and a member of the Orlando City Council. Did you, this notion of becoming a politician? I mean, I know that I'm sure a city council member would not necessarily think of themselves as a politician, but you gotta realize that that's part of it.
It is, and as you said, Mike, I would prefer anybody call me anything other than a politician. But you're right; it goes with the territory.
It goes with the territory.
And you know what? This might be a good message for anybody out there, because I would say this: it was never on my radar to be an elected official. Never, you know, I'm like everybody else, working hard in my career, trying to be a good father, good husband, raise my kids and do my thing. But I happened to pick a place 17 years ago to live called Lake Nona. And Lake Nona was starting to really grow rapidly. And it was in the city of Orlando. And in the city, we elect commissioners by geography. And so 2 months from the election back in, at the time, it would be June of 2012, the city had a different election cycle. Somebody called me and said, Gray, 2 months till election and we don't have a candidate. We need somebody. And I thought, you know, look, what are the issues going to be in Lake Nona? As a growing suburb, there'll be growth issues. There'll mm-hmm. be infrastructure issues. A lot of the social issues that will eventually hit our neighborhood like they hit most, they'll come eventually. But right now, these are growth issues. And I thought, that's my expertise. That's my career. That's what I do. And I thought, you know, I've lived here long enough. It's time for me to give something back. Hmm. And again, it goes back to that, you know, just doing a career and being a dad. You know, I coached Little League here or there, but I really hadn't dug in and sat on a lot of boards and really kind of given back. I thought, you know, I'll give this a shot and see. And if it didn't work, it didn't work, right? I've got another job. That's not something I had to have.
Because you did have to declare and then run, right?
Exactly. So I was in good shape. So I tried it with like some encouragement of friends. And I've got to tell you, 9 years later, I've really enjoyed it. I mean, there's some days, like all jobs, you get in the car and you look in the rearview mirror and you go, what was I thinking? But those are infrequent. I really enjoy what I do. And the reason I said early on, I share it with everyone, is, look, I truly believe the most impact you can have is at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
Things we feel like, people speeding through the neighborhood, hey, I didn't get my garbage collected, whatever your issues are, they're really important to neighbors, right? They probably wouldn't hit anybody's scale at the state or federal level, but locally they're important. And neighbors oftentimes don't know where to go. They know they're in the city, but they don't know who to call. And so I've got a really good team at the city in my district. And I just tell people, call us, we'll help you figure it out.
You know, Dave Zanotti is a guy who I love, and he's been on my program a number of times. He has a program on The Shepherd called The Public Square, and he made this statement to me not too terribly long ago that he felt like a lot of Americans are suffering from what he called PWS, Presidential Worship Syndrome. and I thought it was hilarious. But when you come down to the national federal offices that are elected offices, people, it's like the media has so put them up and put them forward that we think of politicians and politics. And it's almost always in the minds of what's happening at the presidential level or the Senate or the House. And what you said earlier is so true. One of the biggest impacts in government is not at the federal level. It's not at the president. It's at the local level.
It is so true. And I encourage everyone, if you maybe don't want to be an elected official or run for office, there's some issues there. I get it. Do something. Get on the PTA. Coach Little League. Get involved in your community, because this is where we make the impact. This is how we, you know, help to mold what Orlando and Central Florida will be. I don't want to rely on the folks in Tallahassee and in Washington to figure out how we're going to do things. So I'm trying to do my part. And I encourage friends and family and business associates, give it some thought and mm-hmm. and get involved. It's been rewarding for me. I'm glad I did it.
Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, but Lake Nona, when you would have moved there and kind of started being a part of the community and representing now in city council, that area, that would have been a heavy medical kind of quadrant, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it have a lot of business?
At the time I moved there 17 years ago, Lake Nona was still kind of a two-lane road, very rural. No schools in the area. Publix had just built the first grocery store, so we thought we'd really made it. But it was very rural at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then with the Lake Nona / Tavistock group showing up and making a big investment, anchored by the large VA hospital that was mm-hmm. under construction, that really put us on the map. And then UCF came along with their medical school, and it kind of grew from there. And so a lot of the things that happened in Lake Nona, you really have to give the credit to the Tavistock group and Mr. Joe Lewis, who runs it. They have stepped up and put the capital in and the commitment that a lot of these employers who are moving there, and we can talk about some of them in a little bit, have had a lot of confidence that Lake Nona is here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ingredient I would throw in that people sometimes forget about is the airport. No airport's perfect, believe me, especially when you're trying to get through at peak hours. But on the scale of things, and I travel quite a bit, Orlando International Airport is a pretty good airport.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're very lucky to have that, and it's right outside the gates of Lake Nona. Mm-hmm. So that's a big help to fueling the growth as well.
And then you've got a good sector of international Christian ministries headquartered there in Lake
Nona. We do with Campus Crusade and the Wycliffe Group and a lot out there. So, you know, one of the challenges, interesting, like we could maybe go into it another time, is it's been hard for a lot of churches to build out there because the value of the property is so expensive. It's been hard for groups to afford to buy land to do churches. And so the church I now attend, it's at a elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And the school system has been great about accommodating that. But that's been an interesting outcropping of this large growth is property's expensive, and sometimes it's hard to buy the acreage you need to do a church facility.
It's really crazy to think about that in such a short amount of time. All of the prices just skyrocketed because of all of this growth. And, you know, there was a time, like you said, it was a sleepy area, but no more, because the growth has been aimed at that way for some time. And it's now a really beautiful area. And you still have got Moss Park over there.
Oh, yeah. There's still a lot of really great things. And, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of is when I got into all this, so I realized we really didn't have any large parks for kids to recreate in. And so we've done two in the last 2 years, one multi-purpose field, so you can do soccer and lacrosse and all of those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we also built through the city and with Tavistock's help, quite frankly, to do some baseball facilities. So the kids can play baseball, the girls can play softball, and it all works out. So you need the recreation because we've got a lot of young families moving to Lake Nona.
Now, as a city council member, you're representing not only the Lake Nona area before, because it is part of Orlando.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you're on the Orlando City Council.
Right.
But then your responsibilities and your vote will affect many other areas besides what you just live in. And that's got to be a dynamic in this time that is... So, I mean, I know it's a part-time thing, but it could almost be a full-time kind of taking over your brain, right?
It really can, and I think about a lot. It's just not when I walk into City Hall. But you're absolutely right, and I always remind myself that I'm representing the city and all the residents of the city.
And not just your area.
Right, and so I try to, you know, like I said, stay out of the papers. I want to be a good representative. I joke sometimes, I want my neighbors and the residents to say, that's a city commissioner with an exclamation point, not a question mark, because I don't want anybody second guessing going, that's a commissioner. So I'm always cognizant of that. But look, when you look at our group, we have six commissioners and the mayor. There's a lot of talents on there. There's several retired police officers. There's some social workers, a nurse, an educator. And I bring my business background to the council.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to listen to my other commissioners who have some talents and skills that I don't have. And I would say they sometimes listen to me on the business side of things. So it's a good blend. And I really am proud of the other folks on the council. I think we work well together. We have our disagreements. We don't always vote together. But I've got to tell you, in my 9 years, I've never felt disrespected by any of the other commissioners or the mayor.
Is there any term limits on you guys?
There's not. It's interesting. In the city of Orlando, there is not.
Mm-hmm.
And so The real term limits are with the voters. Mm-hmm. And when they decide they need a change for whatever reason, then they need to get out and vote and make that change. But there's no specific term limits.
Is it a four-year term?
It is a four-year term. Mm-hmm. Yep. I jumped in when there was 2 years left on another candidate's term who moved on to do something else. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit off the normal schedule. So I've been doing it now 9 years.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a heart for this long term, or do you
I really don't. I would not consider going further than this. I feel like I'm making a contribution. And it does take time. And to your point, you could mm-hmm. do it full time if you want, and some do. But for me, I think this is a good balance between my private sector and the public sector. And I'll just stay with that balance.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I like that. That's a great answer. Now, I mentioned that you're a friend of a good friend, Pete Alwinson.
Yeah.
Now, you've known Pete for some time. Tell us about that.
Yeah. When we moved to town again 33 years ago, our children were the same age as Pete and Karen. And I met Pete when our kids were going into kindergarten. And I met him, and he said, "Hey, I'm a pastor." And I said, "Well, I'm a Christian. Well, let's get together." So we started attending Willow Creek Presbyterian Church, PCA. And Pete and Karen have been just great, great mentors. And I'm a huge fan of Pete. And I got to tell you a secret. Pete is a great basketball coach. Mm. He helped me. I needed an assistant coach. And I said, "Pete, help me." And so he's not just a great pastor. He's a great basketball coach.
Well, he's in great shape. He looks like he could probably still take anybody out on two-on-two out there.
I think he can. But really, I just, I've said before, there's a lot of great pastors. But when you put the list out there, Pete's got to be on the short list.
I agree completely. A good friend to this program, been up here numbers of times. Yeah. I love every visit that I get from him.
I will say another little secret we had at Willow Creek was Dr. Steve Brown.
Mm-hmm.
He was a member of the church.
Network. Yeah.
And Steve would answer the call and get up and preach sometime. And it's funny, whenever we had guests in town, we would try to encourage him to join us for church, because when Steve speaks, it's like God speaking in that deep voice.
Yeah, he's got like four octaves lower than my voice, good. I'm pretty sure.
Right.
It's really, you all think about that.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how he does it. It's really amazing, but I had him at RTS for a class, and he was our instructor. Our professor for that course, and oh my goodness, I mean, the teaching style that he has, sitting on a stool and just talking to the kids, mm-hmm. it was just amazing.
Yeah, always a good message from Steve, and again, Pete, week in, week out, really got you centered again. And got you focused. And so,
well, that's a pedigree of a fellowship right there that is really uncommon. You have to admit, it's really great.
Yeah.
And Pete's love for the Lord, his just genuine humility that he does not make. He is a smart person that doesn't ever tell you how much education he has.
That's so true. I remember I said, "So I've got to call you Dr. Alwinson?" He said, "No. You call me Pete."
Yeah,
so,
he wants to be
Pastor
known as Pete.
He is a great gentleman.
He really is, and it's wonderful that you have that core at your core. I mean, mm-hmm. that is something, Jim. Just in my first meeting you, I can tell that there's that reality of relationship that Christ has just done a work on the inside.
Thank you,
and it shines
Thank
through,
you.
My man.
He's worked hard. It was a tough job, but he's done well. Hey, look, I know I'm not perfect. I'm a sinner like everybody else, but I try to refocus and do His will.
And it's clear, when you look back, you mentioned the real privilege that you've had with children, your own kids, mm-hmm. being their coach. That is an experience that if I think of dads have not done that, I had a chance to do that too. But I think that's something that every dad should consider.
I encourage the young brokers who work in my firm that I mentor to try to do that with their children. I've got a son and a daughter. And so I coached Little League baseball for my son and basketball. and softball for my daughter and basketball. And look, I didn't know what I was doing, right? They needed some supervision. I remember at the YMCA, I took my daughter for tryouts. And at the end, they were going to pick the teams. And then the organizer comes over and says, well, we're one coach short. And it happened to be my daughter's team. So I said, okay, I get the message. I'll do it. I was glad to do it. And but the point is, I asked some folks for it. And they just said, Jim, the only thing you do at this age, make it a positive experience for everybody. Mm. Right? Nobody's going to the NBA at this level. They're just kids trying to have fun and learn how to cooperate in a team environment. And so my number one rule was to try to figure out ways to make it a positive experience. Mm-hmm. And as a result, surprise, surprise, I had the best parents in the league. Very little parental complaints or interference. Because I think I tried my best to make sure all the kids enjoyed it, got a chance to participate, and we made it fun. Even though we didn't win a lot of games, we made it fun.
Well, I think that if it's fun, even it helps when you don't win the games. But, you know, so many parents and a lot of coaches, sadly, in my experience back in the 70s and 80s, winning was way, way too big of a deal.
Yeah, in some instances, it still is.
Yeah.
But look, and maybe that's some of my upbringing too, as you realize it's a long race and the players who either are, you know, excellent at sports at a young age, if they don't continue to improve and grow and improve their skills, they won't be by the time they get to high school and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the best example that I can think of right now is Michael Jordan, right? Michael Jordan didn't make the high school basketball team. So.
Yeah. Go figure.
And he did okay, I think.
I think he did all right.
Yeah. So anyway, a positive experience is what I tell. And I encourage my young people, my young parents to say, hey, get involved. We'll figure out a way to give you time off. You know, don't worry about it. Leave at 3:30 or 4 so you can make practice. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll figure out. The job will still be here tomorrow.
That's wonderful. What an attitude. Jim Gray, he's my guest today. I'll be back with Jim for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Hey, we all know in business that one of the hardest things to really get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, but I'm here to tell you a little secret that will make the problem simply go away. Boundless Drone Services. They take away all the stress. Brian Fay and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Boundless Drone Services. Contact them today. BoundlessDroneServices.com. It is a real honor for me to have Jim Gray, a very mature man of God who is a city council member, a member of our downtown business community as the managing director at CBRE, and he's a pro in real estate and has bringing that level of expertise to our city council in Orlando. And you know, Jim, Orlando, like every other area, has been hit hard this past year. 2020 was, wow, it was like 10 years in one, wasn't
it? It was.
It's brutal.
Yeah, it was something obviously unprecedented. We had not dealt with it before. And very, very personal, not just from a medical standpoint, but from an economic standpoint.
Yeah.
A lot of companies had to basically shut down and everybody was working from home. Remember those days?
We were
locked in wondering if we were going to get things at the grocery store and toilet paper was at a premium. And boy, it seems like a while ago, but it really wasn't. And that was pretty tough from the standpoint of trying to balance the compassion and the different challenges that people were going through with themselves, their family, and their economics, with the business environment that, you know, you still got to pay your rent, you got to keep the doors open. And so it's this balance was a real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no blueprint, no playbook to go through. We all had to learn as we went. And so I think the one thing I was very proud of from a city commissioner standpoint, but also I got to give credit to Mayor Demings and the folks at Orange County, a lot of communication. They did daily briefings to try to share the information they had with folks. And so it was almost a day by day, maybe a week by week exercise And then, of course, it also had a huge impact on our tourist sector.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, with the closing of that, same issues, you had people that were laid off work and they had the same concerns. How am I going to pay rent? How am I going to put groceries on the table? So, I am glad for how we handled it. I'm not sure it was always perfect, but, what I found throughout all of it is if you just communicate with people and admit you don't have all the answers and keep an open mind and you're willing to listen, then we can get through some things together.
Mm-hmm.
And again, nothing was perfect, but I think until the last probably 30 days or so, I think Orlando, Central Florida, and the state of Florida fared pretty well throughout, with a balance of trying to be safe from a medical standpoint, but also trying to keep people working and try to keep the economy going.
With a commitment to keep that sector alive and not just, because we know that if every business shuts down and is forced to shut down, well, and they may never reopen again.
That's true. That's true. Especially in our world, we see it from the real estate standpoint, but a lot of the small retailers, the people that own, you know, small restaurants and
mom and pop stores,
mom and pop. Exactly. Yeah. Good description. You know, when they go out of it, they don't have the bankroll to do it all over again. They
right.
put their life savings into their dream. And in a lot of cases, unfortunately, that evaporated. And so people are going to have to recover, and they will, but it's tough. It's
mm-hmm.
tough.
Now, are you, as a businessman in Orlando, are you pleased with the kind of like the set of the sails, if you will, on how Florida is walking through?
Yeah, I am. Look, I know there's some tough calls on both sides, but I think, you know, in our country, our constitution, our basic thing is educate and then let people make their own decisions. And I'm in that category.
Mm-hmm.
As I've told people, I made the decision to be vaccinated, but I'm not sure I would want the government to tell me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my own decision, but I think what we need to do is provide accurate, timely information and let folks make their decision, whether it's about vaccinations, how to manage their business, how to bring back employees, et cetera. Again, communicate, be transparent. Nobody expects it to be perfect and all rosy. You got to give the good with the bad, but then let people make their own decision. And I think Florida, for the most part, has done that. And so I've been in favor of that and very supportive.
Now, we've seen some governments in some states, and I'm so happy to say that Florida is not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been a lot of states whose governments have led in a way. I think of the problems in New York with the whole nursing home stuff that's gone on. And, you know, these are times where there have been a lot of critics of those that are in government trying to do a good job. And yet these people in some of these areas, some of that criticism is coming with reason. It's not because of nothing.
No, you're right, Mike. And I think people are smart enough to figure out pretty quick whether they're getting somebody's views with an agenda behind those,
mm-hmm.
or whether they're actually getting information and then they can process it themselves. And I think some of the other areas of our country who are guilty of kind of proposing an agenda hidden by facts, or what they purport to be facts. And I think people figure that out pretty quick.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think people are doing that. And again, I'm so grateful. And it should, to every one of our listeners here, it should really bring, I think, a sigh of relief to realize that we've got guys like you that are on these local positions of city council members that are taking to heart not only things from what I think is a mature standpoint politically, but also in your case, you're bringing that wealth of a biblical belief system,
right,
that is actually flavoring and filtering your decisions.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I've tried to do that. Again, everybody needs to get the info and then they can process it and make their own decisions. And I've been in that camp from the beginning, and I'm going to stay in that camp because I think it's the right thing to do.
What are you seeing as the trends now? We're in this fight right now. This Delta variant has made its ugly head apparent
right.
in more
right.
ways than we ever wanted. But we're here and we're fighting it. What are yeah. you seeing? Are you seeing it getting better sooner or later?
Probably sooner, but I'm going to put up one caveat, and that is as we start school, we're going to have to see how the younger generation does. I think a lot of the discussion so far has been about adults, rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But now is these variants seem to be affecting the younger generations. So we're going to have to kind of see how that goes. Again, I still feel like it's a personal decision that parents should make for their children. But again, we'll get more facts on that. But I'm convinced that we will figure it out. We always seem to do. We've got a lot of smart, smart people in this country. We'll figure out some options and present those, and people can make their own decisions.
What do you say when you talk to people? How do you comfort them with hope? How do you do that?
Well, certainly through the Christian world, you know where your faith lies there. But I like to say, look, I use the gate theory, right? When the gates open, do people come in or do they go out? And in the U.S., well, again, certainly not perfect. When the gates open, people want to come to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do that because, again, not perfect, but we've got a lot of great things going for us, including the medical community. We've got a lot of smart people who will take the information, process it, and come up with solutions, whether that's vaccinations, whether that's some kind of other prescription drugs mm-hmm. we can take. So I just tell folks, be patient, be safe, you know, do what you feel like you need to do to stay away from, stay out of harm's way. But this too will work out and it'll pass and we'll move forward.
Mm-hmm. You know, you think about the words we're hearing from the parks now, who shut down by and large, many of them shut yeah. down in big, I guess Disney was closed for several months,
a couple months.
And then they reopened to some degree, maybe with a reservation basis. And yet now we're seeing things kind of come back online.
Right.
And we're just praying that this uptick in the variant is not going to slow that progress down.
I totally agree. And I think some of the openings were as a result of not having enough workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were limited to what the service they could deliver based on their standards. They certainly didn't want to dilute their product. So that was kind of a governor on how quickly they could get re-energized and mm-hmm. reopened. But yeah, I think we just have to stay vigilant and be patient. And the main thing is just I hope we don't judge each other. There seems to be a lot of judgment, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, whichever camp you're in, you seem to have judgment against the other side. I think understanding is probably a better word than judgment at mm-hmm. this stage, because we'll work through it. Mm. We will.
What when you think about Central Florida moving forward now off of all of that,
yep.
what is the most exciting thing that you think the future holds for Central Florida?
Yeah. Most exciting thing for me is we still have plenty of room to grow, and that is to bring more people here to enjoy the lifestyle that we have. And, you know, as long as we control that growth and do it in the right fashion, we all benefit. I enjoy being an Orlando resident more today than I did 10 years ago and more than I did 20 years ago. And I think that's the biggest part I have. We have plenty of room to grow, to bring folks in. You know, we've got to work. I think one of our biggest challenges is working on our, our wage system. We are heavily dependent on tourism, but guess what we found? As those companies, the Disneys, the Universals, the SeaWorlds, and others needed employees, the wage went right up quickly
mm-hmm.
because they'll adjust to the market. They'll do what they need to do to get employees. And so we need to continue to work on that. But I'm very bullish on Central Florida long term. And I say that, obviously, I'm in the commercial real estate business, but I think for anybody, this is a great place to live, and I see better things ahead for us.
Are you going to stay active in sports and coaching, or is
no,
this,
no, no?
Have you hung up your cleats?
I've hung up my cleats. we'll let that go. But intend to stay here. We love Orlando, and it's a great place to live.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in. And again, want to say thank you for all that you're doing on behalf of all of us who are impacted, really, by all of these local government officials, you being one of them. It really is a great thing to get to meet somebody who has a heart and who has a love and who has discernment that is helping make the decisions that's going to affect the rest of us.
Well, thank you for saying that. It means a lot to me, and God bless you. I appreciate it.
It's wonderful. Jim Gray, my guest today. Thank you, Jim, for being here. And friends, thank you for being with us as well. We'll catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike.